Oh, maybe I thought it was an April Fool's joke. Anyway,
no, it's in the wrong game.
We're going to move the podcast. Recording? That's right.
Shit.
We are. We've been recording.
Here,
we
all have start to banter. Over again. Start Welcome. Over again. There you go.
Welcome to Movie the Podcast. That's right, Movie the Podcast special April Fool's edition. Just your two favorite fools, just TJ and Goggs here, talking about Jimmy Kahn's Thief. That's right, it's Cape Roll, everybody. It needs to be a caper, or you need to be wearing a cape. And if you're doing both, like a Catwoman with a cape situation, is there any supervillains wear a cape?
Well, Catwoman. Oh, wear a cape. Wear a cape. Supervillains that work. I'm sure there's plenty of.
I mean, Doctor Doom, but he doesn't do capers. Like, is there anyone
wears a cape? I'm gonna think of. I mean, Magneto wears a cape when, and he's occasionally a bad guy.
No, not a caper kind of fella.
There's a there is a pretty good comic book called Incognito that was about a supervillain that was also a bank robber by Ed Brubaker. Who, coincidentally, is very influenced by the movie today. You can see it in his writing. I think a lot of things are influenced by Michael Mann's Thief.
Can I say something? Because as I was watching the movie, I had a couple of realizations when watching the movie.
Have you seen this before? By the way,
no, I love this movie. I'm a huge fan of this movie. This movie's gonna be. This is not gonna be a good episode because it's.
Reluctant to just do a two-person episode. I never liked doing two people episodes, but I figured I really want to know. I hope Alec watched it. I don't know if he did or not, but I'd like to know his opinion. I already know yours and Sean's opinion of this movie. If Sean doesn't like this movie, I would be floored. Right. But Alex, I'd be interested to hear.
This is the gentleman, to go back to Anthony's rebuttal from the other week, this is the gentleman thief story I want.
Yeah, but he ain't a gentleman thief. He's a fucking dickhead.
No, right. That's my point. He's just barely, but he's trying to be. He's trying to have a family.
Yeah, but he kind of is
trying.
But I mean, we'll get into it when we get into the movie proper. But that's kind of the point, right? He's trying because he feels like that's what a life is supposed to be. But he doesn't he's a fucking asshole. It's amazing. Yes. Movie's amazing.
Movie's tremendous.
That's the show, everybody. Anyway, let's get into what we watched, because I watched a bunch of shit.
Well, we got 2 weeks worth, so I don't...
Yeah, what'd you watch this week? Goggs!
Oh, me. That's me. I'm Goggs.
Yeah,
it's only two options,
Sean,
right?
Sean watched gay porn, and Alec watched, I don't know, Zootopia. I don't know.
He watched the live stream of Sean watching gay porn.
Damn, Sean live streams now. He's blown up.
Yep.
His OnlyFans.
Yeah, bricked up. So we got me and the kids are starting to work our way through the Marvel movies. So we watched the original Thor. That movie's a lot of fun.
I haven't watched that in years.
It held up well. It held up really well.
I remember really liking it.
Some of the CGI is a little goofy.
Yeah.
And young Hemsworth, he's finding his voice, but I liked it a lot. And you can't Stellan Skarsgård rules. That guy just kicks a pile of ass. You put him in anything, he's gonna just be tremendous. Tom Hiddleston's just oozing charisma. And that's when I was texting you guys. I don't know, Loki has got a pretty good arc through the MCU. He does a lot and he moves around a lot, and I think it's a. I don't know. I think he's not the main character, but he ain't far from it. That held up. And then instead of going through all the origin story movies, because my kids know all the players, I was like, well, how about we just watch the first Avengers movie? So
are there particular characters that they really like the most? So far,
they like Thor a lot.
They watched Guardians, or are you going in order?
They watched Guardians. They like they like Guardians. They like
Guardians.
They like the Hulk a lot. They love Spider-Man, so they're excited about when Spider-Man shows up. But we didn't watch Captain America, we didn't watch Hulk. We just watched we went right to Avengers. And it was, a lot of fun. I was having a great time because I haven't watched the first Avengers movie in forever. And I'm not gonna lie, Liz was talking about how much fun it was
first
to watch
Avengers
me watch
movie is
movie.
Very good.
Well, yeah. I still popped huge for the first time they all got together, when all the Avengers are on the screen at once, as a team.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
I mean, it's a little lost now, but like that was a big moment. And the fact that, I mean, Endgame really, really capped it all off. But like that Avengers movie was a big deal with all those individual movies. Like, it's still kind of amazing that the plan works so well, and to the point now where we're kind of sick of it. But like the fact that they did all of that and it built to one movie was pretty special.
Well, like I explained to my kids, like, you guys don't understand, this is the first time this has ever happened that we got to see these guys on screen together. Like, I know you're like, they're together all the time, they're like best friends, but like when we were in the movie theater as young men, like, this was a big deal to see Captain America, Thor, and Iron Man all sharing the screen. This is the first time they ever met canonically. Like, that's a big deal. Anyway.
And every superhero movie before that was all individualized. Like, every movie was its own thing, its own universe. Like, you might get little Easter eggs here and there, but the idea of having a shared universe was a quaint idea. And again, now it's been fucking overused to death.
Now it's been,
it's like multiverses now. It's like everything is a shared universe. Everything, it's like, oh, we need to get this other version of the character. We're just going to go into the multiverse. It's like that. Every idea has just been ground to death.
When did the new Star Trek movie that offered that, when did the first Bad Robot Star Trek movie come out? Because that kind of...
I don't remember, like 2000 and something. But that was that's not necessarily an alternate. That's a divergent timeline. It's slightly
different. True. Slightly different.
Yeah. Anyway, slightly different. Not much different, but slightly different.
We watched those two things. I watched. I showed Liz. We're gonna watch the new Roadhouse, but before we did that, I had to show Liz the original Roadhouse, the Swayze vehicle.
What'd she think? I love that movie.
I love that movie. That movie is. Yeah, I forgot. And I think I was texting you guys.
I forgot Terry Funk was in that movie.
I forgot how batshit insane the original Roadhouse is. This is how insane the original Roadhouse movie is. They live in a universe where bouncers are renowned. Like, there's a world where people like have heard tale of famous bouncers, and they're like mercenaries. And then the movie has
the most renowned bouncer that I know is a former bouncer, Matt McCormick, my personal favorite bouncer,
dude. He's my Dalton Castle or whatever the hell it is. Like, Dalton, I want him to
just Castle's a wrestler.
What's his name? In Roadhouse, whatever. Matt McCormick can do some throat. I bet Matt McCormick could rip someone's larynx out too. I wouldn't put that past him. There's scenes in that movie that defy logic, even by movies of its time. Like the scene where, like, the bad guy, the bad guy who owns the town, he takes his goons and their monster truck and he drives it through a car dealership to like muscle people out. Like, it's like, and then the way the movie ends, like, buildings are getting blown up. Like, it is insane the things that are happening in this movie. And then in the very end of the movie, right after Patrick Swayze has dispatched Ben Gazzara's anti-Swayze, right?
Right.
And he shows up at Ben Gazzara's house and he does a full-blown home invasion and murders a ton of goons. And then he works his way to Ben Gazzara and he gets into a fist fight with him. And right before, he's got his hand cocked to do the throat rip, right? Like, it's like, and then he chooses friendship at the end of Mortal Kombat. He's like, never mind. Right. And then Ben Gazzara stands up and he gets Alex fucking Murphy by the town. Everyone shows up with a shotgun and they all take turns shooting at him. And then the cops show up and there's like, so what happened here? And they're like, we didn't see nothing. I'm like, like, never in a million years. There's no movie logic that can explain it. Like it's like the end of the Meeseeks episodes. Like, I guess we're going home. No, you have much to explain.
There's so much to explain.
Like, this man was slain in his home by the town, multiple shotguns.
I mean, it reminds me of the ending of No Holds Barred, where that like television producer is like cast into hell, and the rest of the crowd's like, obviously to the audience and to, you know, we know that that guy's evil, but to the crowd, that guy's just like a television executive that's like brutally murdered on TV.
But I tell you what, man, Rowdy Harrington's 1989 fucking Tour de Force Roadhouse is awesome. It is it is another example of Patrick Swayze in a there's like, and I was telling this to Liz, I was like, Patrick Swayze's effectively being the, he's Johnny Castle. That's where I mixed up. Johnny Castle's his name in Dirty Dancing. And yeah. I'm like, he's just Johnny Castle if after he left dancing with retirees at the club, and now he's just fighting dudes. Because you know Johnny Castle has those hands.
Oh, of course.
Patrick Swayze and that head of hair, my God. So anyway,
beautiful head of hair, yeah. Beautiful.
Hair. So we're gonna
RIP to a fucking king. I mean,
that, to an absolute real one.
Yeah.
Patrick Swayze
rocked.
And not just like a dreamboat for the ladies, like a dreamboat for the fellas. He's like a polished up version. Like, I'm a Kurt Russell Mark, you're a Kurt Russell Mark, right?
Absolutely.
But like, he's just like, he's like the pretty boy Kurt Russell, but I mean that in the nicest way possible. Like,
yeah, I agree.
And you've
seen the new Roadhouse, right? We talked about
this. No. We're getting, I watched this to get to line Liz and I up to watch the new Roadhouse film. So, I'm interested to see how that holds up. So what else did I watch? I watched Argyle. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. The plot twists, like, Alex, have you watched it yet?
No, I have not watched it yet.
I thought it was really good. I like the plot twists. I thought Sam Rockwell and Bryce Dallas Howard and Cranston, Catherine O'Hara, they're all great in it.
I feel like I'm gonna like this movie. I mean, I was a little surprised to see the extreme backlash against it, but like, if you
do enjoy, is there a backlash against it?
Oh, people were saying it's the worst movie of the year. People were freaking out about how bad this movie was.
I didn't hear any of that noise.
Yeah.
And in a world where Madam Web exists, this is the worst movie of 2024. Yeah. Like, get out. No, this movie, right now, I mean, I've only seen three 2024 movies so far. So let's keep it real, but it's right after Dune 2. Like, wow. I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought Superman was great in it. Fucking John Cena is great in it. Like, Dua Lipa or Lipa is great in it. Like,
she is an attractive lady. She's easy to look at. Sam Rockwell. How's Sam Rockwell in the movie?
Sam Rockwell's tremendous.
Rockwell. Yeah, he's never like, bad.
It's legitimately, and I mean, all credit to the movie, when the twists happen, genuinely caught by surprise. Because
Alex said the same thing. I gotta watch it.
Halfway through the movie, I'm still trying to figure out, like, how's this going to resolve itself? Like, what's really going on here? And then when the twists present themselves, I'm like, oh. And then there's a twist. And then there's another twist. And I'm like, oh.
I need to watch this fucking movie. I'm gonna watch it this week.
I mean, I liked it a lot. I don't know. I have no idea what people are complaining about. Like, if you liked Kingsman, I'm hard pressed to see.
I like both of them. I like.
But I mean, I'm throwing this out to the general.
There was a third one too. I never saw that one.
The third one sucks.
Yeah, the third one's not good.
The first two were good. Kingsman 2, love that. But but if you liked Kingsman, you'd be hard pressed to not like this movie. So I'm very surprised because Kingsman, I think, was universally kind of
people like Kingsman.
Yeah. So I don't know, Argyle, big fan of that. And the other thing I watched, I guess it's a 2023 movie. It was Dream Scenario.
Oh yeah, I watched that.
I don't know how I feel about it.
That's how I felt about it.
It's like frustrating.
It's kind of good. It's kind of good. It's like what to it's me,
saying it's is interesting. Like
is it though? That's my problem with the movie. It doesn't really have anything to say.
So here's what it kind of states,
and then it kind of like it's like half out there, but it doesn't really. It does. It's like talking about virality and like kind of commoditization, but it doesn't really have anything to say besides putting it out there. Like, what frustrated me the most is there's this idea they literally introduced like 5 minutes before the movie's over, where they're like selling advertisements in your dreams, and I was like, that's a great idea, but
that's
it's like
a Black
literally
Mirror episode they could have like
but the fucking movie's over after they introduced that, and it's just like I don't really like after I watched the movie I was like, what was the point of that movie? I didn't understand. Like,
there was one interesting part Not one. I thought the movie was
several interesting parts. I mean, and Nick Cage is good in the movie.
Oh yeah, and it's like he's like such. Like, here's my experience with it. Like, I guess spoilers for, I'm not gonna spoil Argyle, but spoilers for Dream Scenario, I guess. Like he's a loser, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's just like a fucking simp. But he's not like a loser. Like, he's not a loser because it's being pressed upon him that he's a loser. Like, he's a fucking dud. Like, this is self-imposed, right? And he's it's like pathetic and sad, and you're like, you're kind of like the human. I want to be empathetic and feel for him, but at the same time, like, you're so fucking pathetic and sad. Like, fucking knock it off, right? Like, and then he gets the fame, and then he squanders the fame, sort of. Like, he doesn't know what to do with it, and that's like even like more pathetic. Like, he's pathetic, right? But then the middle of the movie, it takes that turn. Yeah. Where then everyone turns on him.
Right.
And then I'm like, and then I go from like being kind of just like annoyed and like how pathetic are you? To then I start feeling for him. Right. I'm like, he didn't ask for this. He didn't bring this on. And there's a scene in a diner, right?
Right.
Where you sit there just eating his food, reading his book, and people are all upset because he's now the boogeyman of their dreams. And a guy walks up to him, he's like, hey, you need to get out of here, or people feel better if you left.
Right.
He's like, I didn't do anything wrong. I'm just sitting here eating lunch. And I'm like, yeah, he's not doing anything wrong. Like, his wife turns on, his kids turn on, whatever. But then like the guy picks up his food and like spits in it.
Yeah.
And like, and then gets into a fight with the guy. And here's the moment I'm
like, what is that trying to say? Like,
moment I had with that. I was sitting there looking at it going, because I've seen that same confrontation happen to like Tucker Carlson.
Yeah, in public. Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, fuck that guy, right? Like, fuck him. Let him eat shit. But in this instance, I'm like, oh, maybe people deserve to have.
Yeah, but the difference is that Tucker Carlson is that's all fabric. Like, he controls his image. Like, he controls who he is,
right?
And like the point, and like the weird thing is the Nick Cage thing, right? Like, he's like a friendly apparition, for lack of a better term, in people's dreams. And then, like, he changes, and then in the dreams, he becomes a different, like, he becomes a boogeyman. But my point is, like, contextually, I don't understand what the movie is trying to tell me. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I don't, I mean, felt
it's
like.
Close. It's like a heavy-handed exploration of, like, the downfalls of fame, right? Like, that's all it is.
It is, but, like, again, like, you brought up his, like, agency in the fame, and I get that. But, like, again, it doesn't, like. I get that, like, going viral is bad, and how we kind of like idolization and all, but like, again,
and I guess really going viral, like, is not necessarily your choice. Just like, this wasn't his choice.
Yeah. But I don't understand what it's really saying either, because again, he goes through that phase where he's like, he almost cheats on his wife, and he almost goes through these like personal things, but then he doesn't. And then it's like, I don't know. Again, like, the movie felt like it needed like another act or something. I don't know.
I mean, maybe weird. This like a, maybe it's a stretch, but maybe the film is trying to tell us to say, you know, acknowledge and respect someone's humanity both ways, both on the way up and on the way down.
Like, I guess.
Some of these people aren't asking for this. They just find themselves thrust in the middle of it without any preparation.
I mean, I would assume, maybe, but at the same time, again, his actions in the film don't really reflect that message. So I don't know. It's weird. Again, like, it's weird. I
it's
feel
a
like
weird
it's,
movie. Like, I don't hate it. I don't it's like not, it.
It's not weird in the sense that I like weird movies. I feel like it's underwritten. Like, I feel like it,
right.
Again, I feel like there needs, it's not terrible. Again, it's not bad at all, but it needs something else. Like, and it's very close to being good. It just, there needs to be something else into the movie. Yeah, I agree.
I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it either. But I didn't like it. I just sat there and I was like.
Yeah, it was like.
This could be, right, to your point, this could have been something. And they just didn't see it all the way through. But that is everything I watched. TJ, what'd you watch?
I watched three things. One, I rewatched Hateful Eight, which I haven't watched in a long time. It's fantastic. I mean, yeah, I think it's not like good. It's hard for me to rank my Tarantino movies, but I mean, I think it's one of his tightest written scripts. Like, all those characters work together so well. And I don't know, it's just a very well, like, big surprise is Tarantino has a very well-written movie. I mean, talk about a movie that go from a movie that's like underwritten to a movie that's like perfectly written. And again, it's a bottle movie, right? So that movie has to be interesting when it's just, you know, a bunch of characters in a room and that's it. Like, and it's fascinating and compelling. And I love it. I think it's incredible. I mean,
and like, you know, it's got Walton Goggins in it. So who doesn't love Walton Goggins?
Walton Goggins is great in it. Samuel Jackson gives like a super good performance. Like,
no one. I can't think of anyone bad.
What's his name? Bill Dern. Is that his name?
Bruce Dern.
Bruce Dern is really good as like the ex-Confederate general. Like Kurt Russell is of course great. Everybody's good. The whole cast is fantastic. Mike Madsen gives a good performance for what he does with his gravelly ass. Like, yeah, it's like, just really, really good. It's very long.
Jennifer Jason Leigh is great in that movie.
She steals the show. I mean, she's so good. But it's a little long, but it's, man, is it good. I watched that. I watched, speaking of 2024 movies, I watched Immaculate, which is the new Sydney Sweeney movie. I did not like it at all. I did a review on the movie, the podcast, TikTok. If you're on TikTok, follow that, please. But I did a review in there, and in that review, I talk about how, you know, with certain, I mean, we talk about it on the show all the time, but when we see who puts out a new movie, we kind of know what to expect, right? Like when it's like, oh, it's a Blumhouse movie. Oh God, if this is a Lionsgate movie, like you kind of know what kind of movie you're going to get, right? Well, this, Immaculate was put out by Neon, and Neon is generally pretty good. Neon puts out a lot of interesting stuff, a lot of like, they're like another kind of indie house, like A24. They generally put out a lot of like foreign stuff. They put out Titan for one. Mm-hmm. So with the marketing for this movie and then knowing who's putting it out, I didn't really know much about the director. I was like, okay, like, and it looked interesting. I was expecting kind of something like an elevated horror movie, you know, like what's popular nowadays, something that's a little more than the sum of its parts, something to chew on, you know what I mean? And then there a bunch of the marketing, like there's this scene where Sydney Sweeney is kind of in like this like Virgin Mary kind of get up, and she's got this like kind of like sad but stoic face, and people are like comparing it to Florence Pugh's face for Midsommar, and you know, I was like, okay. But the problem is that the movie is just, it is, to quote a Goggsism, it's an inch wide and a mile deep. There's like everything they introduce in the movie is just a veneer. It's just this, like the movie takes place in this, basically this hospice nunnery, right? It's where all these old nuns go to die. And that alone is an interesting premise. Like, I like that setting as a horror movie setting, that's already kind of scary and unnerving. Like, I like that idea. So it's this holy building built on these catacombs where old nurses go to die. That's a great, checked off, like, if you're doing like the fucking like horror, whose line is it anyway, setting is set. That's a great setting. But the problem is they're not interested in like delving into that or making that interesting or doing anything. And then as you go, there's like supernatural stuff that's kind of hinted at and this and that. And I'm going to go ahead and spoil it because I hated the movie. And if you care about this movie, then just fast forward for a couple of minutes. The premise, once you get to the actual premise of this movie, it's so fucking stupid that I mean, I started laughing when they revealed it in the theater. I was like, are you kidding? It's like the dumbest. This is like an asylum movie plot. So they found a nail. One of the nails that Christ was crucified with, right?
Oh, wait, tell me that Jesus come back and killed everyone.
I wish. Better move.
Oh.
No, they found a nail that Christ was crucified on, and they found Jesus's DNA on the nail, and they're trying to genetically cultivate, for lack of a better term, They want to make a Jesus
clone him.
They want to make a Jesus clone, and they're using this nunnery to like inseminate people to make new Jesus. It's so fucking stupid. Like,
I'm not gonna lie though, like the way you said it, I'm a little interested in doing
that idea. Is so fucking dumb, dude. That is the dumbest fucking idea. And once they introduce it, it's like, but the problem is, here's the thing, right? So the problem is they introduce this, like, there's only about half an hour left in the movie. The rest of the beginning of the movie, there was all this, like, again, hinted at, like, supernatural stuff. There's all this under, well, none of it's there because it's all science. It's all science based. Who's the fudge? And it's so dumb. And the fucking, the thing is that nothing really happens in this movie to, like, I keep seeing people say they love this movie because they love the last 10 minutes. And it's like, you can watch a movie for the last 10 minutes because it's the only part of the movie anybody wants to talk about. And it's like, I'm sorry, if it takes 90% of its runtime to get to the one good scene, it's not a good movie. I'm sorry.
No. Is that scene even good? That scene that they're talking
about? No, she kills a baby. Wow. Shocking. She kills a baby. Oh my god!
I kind of like the idea of, like, they're trying to clone Jesus on this nail blood thing, but it's like, so I would love it if it was like they were fed a. But it would be great if they were like given a bag of magic beans and they're just cloning like a guy, like it's just Dave.
I mean, that would have been a better movie, or like, if you know what I mean, like anything other than what we got. And then the other thing is I thought it was funny, right? Because this movie again has this veneer of being this kind of classier indie horror movie, right? But like, anytime you see Sydney Sweeney, like, there was some producer that was like, okay, she's a nun, so she can't get naked, but like, we're gonna have her in the thinnest, wettest shirt through the entire movie. And like, look, I'm a pervert, it's well established on the show, I'm not complaining, but like, it's a little embarrassing when like, it's so obvious what you're doing. Like, she's in this, like, I don't even know what you would call it, like, whatever, like, the underdress is to a habit.
A shift, maybe?
Yeah, I don't know. But it's constantly wet. You can see her tits through it. It's just like, okay, like, again, I don't mind. I mean, they're wonderful to look at. But, like, it's a little...
Do you think she gets tired of that? Do you think she's, like, on set and she's like, can I just wear regular clothes and be an actress? Because I'm not going to lie, her acting in Madden Web wasn't bad. Like,
she's not terrible in this. I mean, it's just, yeah, I'm sure she gets sick of it, but like, you know, she's the hot star right now, so she's not gonna complain because she wants to keep being famous. Yeah. But like, it's just, it, like, again, like, it's just very distracting and it's obvious what you're fucking doing. Like, it's like, okay guys, like, can you dial it back a little?
Like, the director's like, hey, Sydney, while you're at it, can you touch your elbows behind your back real quick?
Dude, it's that bad. It really is that bad. Because it's just like, okay.
I bet you can't.
And then lastly, I watched a movie called The Passenger, which came out last year.
Is it any good?
It was great. Okay. I really liked it. It's on Prime.
Is it based on the Deftones song?
No, it's also a Iggy Pop song. And I think the Deftones song is just called Passenger, whereas the Iggy Pop song is called The Passenger. I am the passenger, and I ride. You ever heard that?
I love that Deftones song, though.
Yes, I love the Deftones, too. But anyway, Passenger is funny because I watched it on Shudder. But it starts out and it says it's a MGM Plus exclusive or MGM Plus original. I'm like, what the fuck is MGM Plus? Something that clearly doesn't exist anymore because it's on Shudder. But anyway, this movie is great. It's something I never heard of. It's a very simple story about this guy. He works at this hamburger restaurant. He's a pushover. He's very quiet and like mousy and doesn't want to stick up for himself. And one day the cool kids at his work bully him real bad. And there's this kind of like unhinged looking redneck guy that like kind of steps in while he's getting bullied. And he's like, hey, man, leave him alone. And the big tough kid's like, you know, stay out of this or I'll fuck you up. And he continues to bully the kid, the big tough guy. And the redneck guy just goes out to his car, gets a shotgun, and kills basically everyone in the restaurant, except for the mousy kid. And then the rest of the movie is just him, the two of them driving together. The guy that killed everybody, he feels like he's this kind of like mentor to this kid, and he's going to make him learn how to like stand up for himself and
be a man.
He pontificates all these philosophies about life, and it's super tense and it's really well done. The actor that plays the guy that kills everybody is so fucking good. I don't know his fucking name. I should have looked it up before.
Kyle Gallagher.
Yes, he is incredible in this movie. He makes the movie. There's a scene. I don't want to give everything away, but there's a scene where he encounters something from his past that triggers him pretty hard. And again, throughout the whole movie, you know, he's the tough guy, right? He's the guy. He's not the tough guy. He's the guy that has all the authority and has all the power, and he's in control, right? That's what he keeps saying through the whole movie about how he wants to be in control, and he's controlling his life and this and that. And there's something that happens that triggers him like really bad, and it harkens back to his childhood. And there's a moment where he's alone in a bathroom, and you can see the pain in his face, right? Like, it's so well acted. And then he literally kind of just snaps and shakes his head, and he goes from being sad and all the pain in his eyes, like the sad pain in his eyes, washes away to just back to the anger that you know him from the rest of the movie. It's such a brilliantly acted scene. I thought the movie was great. I loved it. I thought, and the other thing that I think is really cool about it is, and I might be reading too much into this, but I think this movie is a commentary on the whole like manosphere, like manliness guru bullshit that you see on TikTok and YouTube, because that's what he sounds like. He sounds like a Jordan Peterson, Andrew Tate, that kind of goober. That like, and again, at the end of the day, he's just as fragile and insecure as the
kid. He's just putting on an act. Yeah,
exactly. It's a brilliant movie, though. I loved it. I highly recommend everybody watch it.
I've added to my wish list.
I really was surprised at how good it was. I thought it was a really excellent film. It also does a really good job, and not a lot of movies do well at this. It does a really good job at showing what it's like to grow up in a very small town. Like, this feels like a small, they even mention it in the movie, but like, they're like, this is a town of 10,000 people. Nobody's going to know what to do with a triple homicide in a town this small. Right. And it's accurate. Like, that's very interesting. And I feel like, I don't know, you and I both grew up in an extremely small town. And I feel like, I don't feel like a lot of movies pull that off or do that justice. I Red Rocket comes to mind is another movie that does that pretty well. But I really like The Passenger. I hope more people get to see it. I thought it was great. I thought it was really, really good. I really enjoyed it. It's a very well, like, it's very well written, very well acted. I will say that, like, the plot is a little A to B. Like, I kind of think you know where it's going.
That's fine.
But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great movie.
If it's well made, like, A to B plot's just fine.
Highly recommended. It's very, very well acted. The acting is top notch. So, really, really solid.
All right. Should we talk about James Caan's Thief?
Yes, James Caan's Michael Mann's Thief.
Jim Belushi's best movie.
Yeah, Jim Belushi. So, a little fun fact about this movie. I know Alec usually throws in the movie fun facts. Anthony told me this. So, you know, this movie is like wet all the time.
Very wet.
So he literally got like water trucks on set and was just hosed down all the sets before they shot. So it constantly was wet and raining, and you have those really cool like neo-noir-y reflections and everything. Let me just get this out on Front Street. There is so many movies owe this movie a debt of gratitude. Like, there's no Drive without this movie. Like,
there's no Uncut Gems.
Oh yeah.
There's no Good Times. Like, the Safdie brothers owe this movie.
Oh, great. I mean, there's no Pusher. There's no Pusher 2. There is like a lot of Nicholas Winding Refn in this movie. Like I said, Drive is huge. Like, I think Drive is a huge, debt of gratitude to this movie. But this movie is, I feel like it is like, it is so, I mean, did we do Manhunter on the show? We didn't do
we
it
did
on
Manhunter.
The show.
Manhunter. We did Manhunter.
Did we do Manhunter on the show?
Did we do the one with the guy from NCIS.
Yeah, we did do it on the
CSI,
show.
CSI, yeah. And Tom Noonan.
Yeah, that is a movie that drips with style. And I feel like this movie also is just, it's just packed to the gills with fucking style. This movie has style for days. This is one of those, Sean likes to refer to these as just cool. This is just a cool movie. Like, it's just, I don't know, man. What happens in this movie, guys?
So you're introduced to James Caan's character, and he is him and Jim Belushi. And I don't know if their driver buddy ever gets really name checked, but he is a thief, and he's a very good thief. And the movie opens mid caper. Like they're breaking into some sort of diamond repository or something. And they've got the alarms all countered, and then James Caan is in there using a drill on this giant electromagnet clamped to the side of this vault. And he's drilling a hole into the lock mechanism. Then he knocks it out. And then it's like competence porn, effectively. Like it's right, just watching someone who is just like at the peak of their craft. And then he gets into this vault and he's just throwing diamonds over his shoulder. Like he didn't give a shit. Right. And he's looking for these specific graded stones.
I love how there's people's like personal effects, like watches and necklaces. He's just like, fuck this shit.
These like these diamonds and these little paper folds of paper. And he steals all those and he gets out of there and no one's the wiser. And they switch cars and do whatever they have to do and they get out. And you just tell it's like Michael Mann also did Heat, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like when you're watching them, like it is by the numbers. It is crisp, and he is just top of his game, right? So then he goes to his fence.
I mean, we're going to talk about this a lot. I mean, I think like Jimmy Caan's performance in this is so good, but there is he just exudes confidence in every scene. Like he's got this way about him. I don't know. Like I was talking a lot to Anthony today at work, like. I don't really like. I know James Caan was like a big movie star in the 70s, but like I haven't really seen a ton of James Caan movies, and I've seen this, but I mean I saw this when I was like 18, so I just watching this again, it was almost like watching it for the first time. His charisma is just through the fucking roof.
It's like James Caan. It's like you see him nowadays. You see him like an old man. They stunt cast him a little bit, like an elf. Or in other things.
Or in didn't we watch some terrible ass movie that he was like in?
Yeah, he was like the director of the CIA or something.
Yeah, it was like one of the Rock movies.
Oh, was it Eraser? Was it Eraser?
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
But like back in the day, right? He's Sonny Corleone and he's Frank from Thief. Like those are the two young James Caan.
He's great in The Godfather. He's awesome.
Oh my God, he's insane. But like, anyway. So he goes to the fence and he hands the fence the diamond. He's like, I need you to sell this and whatever. And the fence like, hey, this guy wants to meet you. He's like, I'm not interested. Just sell the fucking stone. So he is all business. He is like how De Niro, like once again, Michael Mann, Heat, right? But like how De Niro was in Heat. Like, it's just, I don't give a shit. This is not about flash for me. This is about getting money so I can be done with this life. Like, that's my job. So get me my money. 186 grand, whatever it is, blah. So he goes and he's going to do his thing. You find out he owns like a car dealership and he owns a bar. Like he's invested his money around. He spread it around. And he finds out, he calls Jim Belushi. And he's like, hey, did you make the pickup? He goes, so the fence Jim Belushi, got thrown.
He's legitimately really good in this movie.
Jim Belushi is legitimately very good in this movie.
He's like, real good in this.
Like he's like.
Oh wait, it's John, isn't it? It's not Jim.
No,
it's John.
No, it's Jim. This is Jim James Belushi. John Belushi is from Saturday Night Live.
Right, I know. I honestly thought it was John.
No, this is Jim.
Anyway, he took the wrong one.
God, he's great in it. So you find out that the fence got in with some bad people. He's been making loans on the side or skimming the VIG or something. He gets thrown off a fucking window, right? So now James Caan's like, listen, my money was on that hump when he died. I want my money. I don't give a shit. I'm not going to walk away from this. So he goes and finds this guy, Attaglia, who owns like a plating business.
This scene. Also, help me out. What is it? Like, I'm forgive my ignorance. Like license plates? Is that what?
No, like nickel plating. Like plating you would put on finishing finish zinc. Nickel,
oh, I feel like so things. Stupid. I was like, what the hell is a plating business? I didn't even know what that was. Dude, this scene, though, this scene is so good. This scene fucking
rocks. He walks into the dude's office and he puts his chair next to the fucking desk. And I'm like, that's a power move if I've ever seen one. And then he negotiates this at gunpoint about how, listen, the guy's like trying to say, I don't know what you're talking about. And this is obviously a front for, you know, a crime boss or whatever. He's listen, I want $186,000 because that's what's owed to me. I don't give a shit about anything else. And if it's not to me in 24 hours, it's your ass. And he fucking leaves with a 1911 pointed at everybody.
Everybody. Yeah.
Everybody. The secretary.
There's a secretary. Or it's not a secretary. There's a guy just getting coffee. And even he gets it like pointed at him. It's like.
Right. Because James Caan don't give a fuck. Right.
He don't care. There is his money. There is a volatility to his character that is very understated. And it doesn't really boil up until literally the end of the movie, but man, it's there. It's there the whole time.
So then, like, he gets his money, and he, but like all this stuff went down, and as a result, he missed a date with this girl who runs a cigarette stand or whatever, and he finds her, and he basically kidnaps her into a date, and you find out that she used to like. She's not the waitress from Baby Driver. Like she used to move weight. Like she used to move cocaine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Like she's not like unaccustomed to like the seedy underbelly, but he's like, look, I want to do it right. I want to be right with you. Also, you find out that, you know, he visits his friend Willie Nelson in prison.
And dude, Willie Nelson life. Is so good in this movie.
Dude, Willie Nelson is just like, and he's just like, he's got angina. He's going to die. He doesn't want to die in here. So James Caan's got to find a way out. And he's like, there's a scene where Willie Nelson's like, how's everything going with your lady? And you tell James Caan is just trying to, he doesn't want to put anything on this guy. So he's just lying to him. But you can see it in his eyes. Like, he's like, oh, everything's great, you know? But like, you can tell it's bullshit. James Caan is acting his ass off in this fucking movie. So. He's like, all right, I got to get this guy out of prison, whatever. And the guy who paid him the money is this bigger boss guy, the guy that's over at Taglia. And he's, listen, he's like, I'm the guy who wanted to meet you. I'm the guy the fence fences stuff to. I've got an opportunity for you, right? If you want a job, you come work for me, right? And I'm talking about set for life money. And they come to an agreement that they're going to do this heist. But it's the heist is.
Actor, by the way, Gox. That guy looks so fucking familiar. He is in a ton of shit.
He never plays this. This is the most. This is Albert Brooks in Drive. Like, yeah, that he is the most unassuming, but like he is evil.
That guy's been
name,
in tons of stuff.
His name is Robert Prosky. That's the actor's name, right? And the thing I was trying to figure out what I knew him from, and I'm going through the list of movies that he's in. He's the guy at the movie theater in Last Action Hero.
Oh no, he's shit.
What else? He's the judge in the remake of Miracle on 34th Street. He is. Oh, you know who he is? He's the TV chairman of the TV station in Death to Smoochie.
No shit.
I've
seen that before.
A movie that is criminally underappreciated.
Love those.
So anyway,
we never reviewed it on this show, to be honest.
I'm shocked. So anyway, this guy's like, listen, I'll set you up, you come work for me, big scores, right? Whatever. Do two, three things, you'll never to worry about me again. Just do one or two things for me. Come on, just work it out. We'll set you up. You can walk away from this whole life, right? So they agreed to this job. I think the job's in California.
Yeah, I think so.
And so it's like this super safe. Right, this insane vault that's like handcrafted. No two are alike. You can't pick the lock because you don't know what the lock is. On top of that, there's motion sensors. So he goes to his like his metal shop scientist metallurgist buddy, and this guy, he's like, I need you to be able to make me something to cut through this. He's like, give me 2 weeks, and then he's like, all right, we got all these alarms. We got to figure them out. Jim Belushi, get on the case. Jim Belushi figures out how to hack the phones to listen to what the code word is to get the silent alarm off. Like, once again, competent porn, right? Mm-hmm. So they finally get this, like, it's time for the heist, right? And it is, they go in through the elevator. They cut open the top of the elevator shaft, and they airdrop in, and they get past all the alarms, whatever else. And then I think what they managed to create is something akin to, like, a thermite torch. Like, right, they make, like, a thermite sparkler. And they put on, they don these fireproof suits, and they're spraying the place down with fucking with fire extinguishers the whole time. And I'm not gonna lie, some people probably say this took a little long for them to go through this, but Michael Mann made a meal out of them cutting through this thing.
It looked awesome. Yeah,
I'm not gonna lie, I'm there for it the whole time.
It looked great.
They cut into the safe. Yeah.
Also, like, there's a lot of, like, really innovative, like, camera shit in the very beginning of the movie. There's that weird push in to the pins that he's like, it's not really, I guess that's not really pins, but you know it's what I'm talking
lock
about.
Where, mechanism. Yeah.
Yeah. But he like pushes the camera into that. And it looks really cool. Like, Michael Mann has like a very interesting eye for perspective. Like,
they did clever shit. Like, they moved all the flammable stuff to the other side of the room. They took almost like spray foam adhesive, like hardener, and sprayed it all over the fire alarm devices and sprinklers so none of those would go off. Like, they thought it through, and they cut in, and they get in, and they steal the shit, and they get out, right? And their cut's supposed to be like $840,000, right? So they go down to like Palm Beach, or they go somewhere, and they're taking some time off just to like let the heat cool down. Right. Once everything's all clear, they're going to come back home. They're going to get their share of the money. He's married to this woman now, and they got a baby. Oh, that's one of the reasons he fell in with this guy, because the guy was like, they wanted to adopt a kid. He's like, well, just give me one of the, I think he says, like, give me one of the black ones, the Chinese ones kids don't want. Just give me somebody. Like, I don't care that I was a prison. Like, they won't let him adopt someone because he was in prison, and he gets all hot-headed about that. And then this crime boss is like, I'll get you a baby. No problem.
Right.
He gets him a baby. Right. So him, the wife, the baby, things are going great. They did this big score. He's going to clear like $840,000 or something insane. And he's like, and then I'm out. Right. And they're like, do you want me to put some money on the street? I love the term. Thank you, Sopranos. Put some money on the street for you. Like, I love the love that term. Cause like, you want us to put your money on the street? He's like, no, I just want my money. But like, you know, you could put it out on making loans and then collect a percentage on it, right? Like, that's kind of the idea. It's like Wise Guy Wall Street. He's like, no, just give me my money. I want out. This is a square deal. I did what I said I was gonna do. And now this guy, right? He's like, you're not out. I own you. Like, this is not how this works. Right. Here's 60 grand. Go have fun. But he's like, listen, I want the rest of my $800,000.
And you're doing a good job at like the way he's just so cold. He's just like, no, this isn't it. Like, he's like, there's no like this movie is so good at like really good line delivery. Like, you said it before, but that guy is just like evil incarnate. He doesn't look it, but like just the way he carries himself is just like, it's so vicious. Good. Yeah.
So Khan's like, listen, give me my money in 24 hours or else. Does the exact same thing he did to Attaglia in the beginning of the movie, right? Well, this guy's not putting up with it. He goes and fucking kills Jim Belushi and then beats the crap out of James Caan. I missed. There's a whole plot in the middle where some cops are trying to shake down James Caan for a piece of the action because they can't catch him and they know what he's up to. And they like beat on him and they try and get him to like, and it's just, you know, it's sort of, but it just further illustrates like how professional and how tough James Caan's character is in the movie. So no one's shaking this guy, and this guy's coming close. He kills his partner. He's like, listen, your wife, your kid, you all belong to me. So you're going to do this for as long as I tell you you're going to do this. And that's the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
And this guy doesn't realize who he's talking to. And probably because he's talked to plenty. You can just tell this is a well-rehearsed speech.
Yeah, this is not this guy's first rodeo. No, not at all.
And then James Caan goes full terms of in rampagement, and he goes home, and he tells his wife,
"This is the best."
He's like, "We're not married anymore."
This is the best part of the movie. Like, I thought this part of the movie was incredible because, again, like there's so much emotion in going on in his character, but like he's just like incapable of like. I don't know, it kind of reminded me in a weird way of the whole like Kenny Powers, like, I'm not going to stop yelling because if I stop yelling, that means I lose the argument. Like, James Caan is so angry, he can't turn his levels down to explain. Like, he can't be like, get out of here. This is why. He's like, no, get out of here. It's for your own good. Promise me. You know what I mean? Because
he doesn't even do that. He tells her off. He says, I don't love you anymore. Yeah. I don't need you. Get out of here.
Fuck out. Yeah.
It's like trying to get a dog to run away, even though
you can read this in a couple different ways, right? Because this viewing, I kind of watched this like he was being sincere when he said all that stuff. Like, I think, well, again, watching this, I thought, and I didn't get this read the first time I watched it. I think that his whole vision board is a sham, right? Like,
he's got a vision board. I forgot.
He is literally a fucking sociopath that just thinks he's getting the things that he needs in life. I don't think he really gives a shit. I don't think he cares at all. And I think that the thing he tried to build crumbled and he got rid of it immediately. Now you could also read it that he is, you know, on a suicide run. Like, he knows he's probably not going to make it out.
That's how I read it. I looked at it more like, so let me run it back. They paid off. I'm all over the place. I apologize to the fan. There's a great scene in a courtroom where he paid off basically a lawyer to get Willie Nelson out of prison. And the way they're negotiating with their fingers on their
arms. That was so cool. Yeah, I like that scene.
And then, like, so.
Yeah, Willie Nelson has some kind of like terminal disease or something.
He's going to die. He's got a heart disease. So he dies, but he doesn't die in prison, right? So that was his goal.
That was his whole goal, to get him out. Prison. Yeah.
So now Willie Nelson's dead. This guy has told him he's going to work under his thumb. And James Caan is not James Caan works for James Caan. James Caan doesn't work for anyone, right? So the fact that someone's trying to put their thumb on him is not going to fly, right?
No.
So the way I read it is, you know, like, he wants these things. He thinks this is, to the vision board thing, he thinks this is what you're supposed to have. This is the goal, right? And he's very close. He almost gets it. He can almost taste it.
Yeah.
And then this guy comes and ruins it. And that just sends him around the bend. But instead of making other people get hurt, people I think he genuinely cares for and maybe loves.
Right. He gets rid of them. Yeah.
He gets rid of them. But then he says, you know what? You're not going to fuck me up because I'm going to fuck me up. He burns down his car business. He leaves. He goes scorched earth. He's like, there is nothing you can take from me. I'm going to put myself at rock bottom. He puts his wife and his baby in a car with $410,000 of $1981. And he's like, drive them somewhere that no one will find them. And then
there's nowhere to trade. There's nothing to like, there's no business. There's no house.
There's nothing. There's nothing. He has basically made himself a man. He has nothing to fall back on. He's basically burned. What's the term? Burn the boats. Like, this is it. There's no retreating. So he goes after this dude at his house, has at it, survives, wanders into the night, and that's the movie.
Oh, it's so good.
It is, and it's like Tangerine Dream just scoring this movie. That's who did it. Tangerine Dream did it. It's like score by Tangerine Dream, and it is just like, it is just synth and just like,
it's so good.
It is like, it's oozing with style.
And he does walk off, but like, he is wounded. So like, you don't know.
I don't know how it's going to end up for him, but like,
But I mean, it kind of doesn't matter because he's already forfeit his whole life. Like,
right. Like, he's like, whatever. Like, he'll do it again. Maybe like, it's not perfect. It's not a perfect movie by any stretch of the imagination.
It's pretty close.
Yeah, it is as a caper movie, as a heist movie. And it's the movie is,
I really don't like when it goes to like crime. This is like one. I mean, this is like kind of, you know, when you talk about neo noir. I mean, it doesn't get much better than this. This is like a neo noir classic. Look, we already went an hour. Amazing. A little under an hour, I guess, because we didn't start right at 7. I don't know. Anything else to talk about before we get into scores? I mean, we kind of talked a lot about it through the movie.
I'll sit there and just gloat how much I love this movie. I do have one thing. I have a fun story about this movie, though.
Please.
I had not seen this. I don't know when the first time you saw this movie was. I didn't see
I got it when Netflix was still sending you the DVDs. And they have a nice, like, the version that, if you watch the version on the Plex, that's the nice
Criterion
version. But the version I had was this bobo-ass copy of it, where it's Jimmy Caan holding the gun, and it's, poorly cropped. It looked like shit. But yeah, I watched it on, like, a DVD. It did not look that good, but, I was a long time ago. I was, 19 when I watched this.
So I didn't watch this movie until, 2021.
Yeah,
I was in Louisville, Kentucky, and I was at this bar called Planet of the Tapes, and this bar
that's an awesome name.
The bar had it was like a Mica art installation. It was a bar and it had tables and it had a stage, and there was a legit VHS tape rental area in the back. But they would just show movies. Like, you'd be sitting there having a drink and talking, but there's just a movie on the screen just right there. And I look over and it's James Caan doing some shit. And I'm like, what the hell is this? Hey, buddy, how are you? Thank you. I'll come up in a minute, okay? Love you. Hey, buddy.
He was talking
to me. Yeah. So I'm like, what is this? And I asked our waiter. And the waiter's like, oh, that's Thief. I'm like, what the hell is Thief?
Hell
so
yeah.
Then when I got home from the trip, I watched it. I was like, oh, this movie rules. How have I not seen this up until now? And then I think I was telling you about it, and then you were the one that was like, yeah, Drive was like inspired by this movie.
Definitely. Well, not like, I mean, indirectly, I guess a little bit, but yeah, this is one of those like bedrock movies. This is a staple of the genre. Like I said,
You're not getting like any of these.
This is one of the reasons Michael Mann is Michael Mann. I mean, this is an early film for him. I think
this is his first film.
This is his first film. Yeah.
After this, it was the Keep.
I've never seen the Keep. That's like a World War II movie. I think
it's like a horror movie.
I think it's a horror World War II movie. I've been meaning to watch it for years.
So 1981 Thief, 1983 The Keep, 1986 Manhunter, 1992 Last of the Mohicans. I can say that
I didn't know he made Last of the Mohicans. How did I not know that? That's crazy.
And then 1995 Heat. Like, his first five directorials.
Oh, bangers.
I can say, I haven't seen The Keep. I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, but I need to. I'll put the Keep on the Plex. I've been meaning to watch it for a while.
4 out of 5 are not just good movies, but phenomenally good movies.
I love Manhunter. I love
Last of the Mohicans. Movie. I love Heat.
I don't think I've ever seen Last of the Mohicans.
Oh, it's so. Dude,
I remember when it came out. Like, I think I got it confused with Dances with Wolves, which I did not want to watch.
You've got to watch. Dude, Daniel Day-Lewis and Last of the Mohicans, that movie rules. Last like 15 minutes of that movie are just amazing.
I'll put that in the Keep on the Plex. I'll check it out.
Like, there's a scene where he's like, I won't spoil it, but Last of the Mohicans rules. But anyway, so let's talk about, I guess,
scores.
It's a 9, maybe it's a 10. I don't know. Like, I feel I don't want to give it a 10 because I feel like I've already given out 2 10s this year, but it's a 10. Fuck it. I loved it.
Fuck it. I like it too.
There's a couple of things that maybe go a little long, but like,
yeah, there's slight pacing at times, but yeah, no, it's not anything to hold it back.
But like, I love it. Like, I'm here for it the whole time. And then the end when he goes in rampage mode, like,
oh yeah,
James Caan's great. Everyone's great in it. If you get Jim Belushi in a good role, how are we doing this? And then the score is really good. It is just oozing style. And
it perfectly matches what's going on screen too.
Visually, it is just like, it is awesome. And for 1981, there's so much that, like, modern, especially the folks that like the Safdie brothers and Nicholas, like we said, the Nicholas Winding Refn's, the guys that like the down and dirty, like, street level,
yeah,
like a grimy movie. This movie is grimy. Yeah. And like, and it's unapologetically so. Like, there's no trying to make Frank into anything he's not.
Another guy influenced by this movie is Joe Carnahan, like with like Narc.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like, yeah. That's dude, a big,
those guys like you're not like unapologetically just, they just, these characters know who they are. And despite what they try, they cannot escape who they are. And that's just the way it is. And I love, it's a character study. I love it. Yeah. I freaking love it. So it's a 10. I'm, dead. Third 10, 2024 is off to a great year. Three 10s already for me. TJ.
It's a 10 for me, dog. I fucking love this movie. Yeah, I was almost gonna give it a 9 because there's not enough Willie Nelson in the movie, because Willie Nelson is fucking incredible in this movie. And like the scene where, I know we love talking about gay subtext in movies, but the scene with the first time you meet Willie Nelson with James Caan, they seem like a romantic couple that are split apart due to one being in jail. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like that's almost super text the way, because they're very close. Like, I you can't see me on the podcast, but they frame it where they look like they're literally talking an inch away from each other's faces. Like, it's very interesting the way he decided to shoot that scene.
You can tell that like Willie Nelson is the one person in this movie that you have no question that James Caan loves.
Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the whole movie is so good. James Caan is really good. All the acting is really, really good. I like all the bit characters too. I thought that everybody felt like nobody felt like a minor NPC, right? Like, mm-mm. I felt like everybody had a pretty significant role. I felt like the plot moved along pretty well. I loved how, I think you said it during your synopsis, but it's very tightly written. Like, it's a very, and this, it's a very yes and plot, right? It's mm-hmm. not like, you know, a lot of times we watch these movies and it's just like, why the fuck did that happen? Like, everything makes sense. Everything is wrapped up and it's very nice. And I wanted to ask Sean, I'll have to try to remember. So in the credits, Michael Mann got, so this is based off of a book, right? But he, ooh. Michael Mann gets story by credits and screenplay credits. What the fuck is that? Like, I don't understand that.
It was inspired by a book. It's not.
Oh, like, okay. So it's not based off the book. So it's that not makes based more off sense.
The book. It's inspired so by.
It's inspired by the book. Michael Mann came up with the story that's inspired by the book, and then he wrote the screenplay. Okay,
it says, that makes the sense. Screenplay is inspired by the book, The Home Invaders, Confessions of a Cat Burglar, a memoir of former cat burglar Frank Homheimer. So, like, he probably read that and goes, okay, this is kind of an interesting character. What situation can I put him in?
Makes sense then. That makes sense. Didn't need Sean. Didn't need him anyway.
I just knew as, like, I mean, I don't think money.
I don't think it did very well. I think it was critically liked, but I don't think it did very well financially.
That's true.
But bad. I mean, I'm not surprised. I mean, that's the story of like a lot of great movies. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It is. I don't know, man. It's so good, and it's like, I mean, like I'm saying, I didn't see it until 3 years ago, right? And I'm a movie buff. Like, oh, yeah. I'm
surprised it took you that long to watch it, because you also love crime movies and the classics, you know. So
I like, so that makes me think how criminally under, like, appreciated this movie is, probably outside of certain circles. So like, I'm very interested to hear how some of our listening audience likes Thief, because man, it is
Michael Mann.
Michael Mann, is it good? Like, it is.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, Michael Mann's fallen off a little bit.
Anybody put out a movie last year that I still haven't watched? It's Ferrari, I think it is. It's about, or no, it's something like that. It's some car.
But then he also, I think you're right. But then he produced Ford v Ferrari, right?
Not sure. He wrote a book sequel to Heat, which I heard was good, but I'm not reading a book.
Nope. There's a movie. He did the Miami Vice movie,
which I hear people defend all the time. I've never actually
seen like on its face, I want to mock it, but you know what? It's got two actors I don't hate, and it's got, like, and it's Michael Mann. So maybe
I might Might watch it.
I know I like Collateral. I know other people don't like Collateral. I like Collateral.
It's due for a rewatch. I'd like to rewatch it. Maybe I judged it unfairly. That's a Michael Mann movie as well, isn't it?
That's Michael Mann. Yeah, it's Tom Cruise. And Jamie Foxx.
All right, so yeah. What are we watching next week, buddy?
I mean, my vote is Hell or High Water.
Well, you're the only one here, so that's
Hell
what we're
or
watching.
High Water, then. That, all right. Fucking, that, you know, another, this could be a great week. This could be a great month.
I'm looking forward to it. I love that movie. So, yeah, we're going to be very, hopefully you guys like those shows where we like the movies, because I feel like we're going to be watching a lot of decent movies. I mean, you got Madam Web last week, so.
Yeah, no, we're too. Yeah. Like, Ben Foster, Hell or High Water. Chris
and Foster
Pine?
Rocks. Yeah.
Fucking Jeff movie. Bridges. This movie fucking rules. Oh, I'm so excited.
Jeff Bridges when he's trying too. Like,
when
he's trying.
Yeah. God damn it. All right, anyway. Smart.
All right.
Lovely movie.
All right, everybody.
Talk to you all
next week. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
April Fools.
Suck one.
Gogs is gay. April
Hell
Fools.
Yeah.
Or
wait, double reverse.